The Drama of the Week is a download from the BBC.
My desire is to cross the Antarctic continent from sea to sea. The journey across is the thing I want to do. The last great polar journey that can be made. The expedition will be called the Imperial Transantarctic Expedition. I desperately want to have one more go.
Beyond Endurance by Meredith Hooper.
We entered the pack ice of the Weddell Sea in December 1914. Instead of the ice being loose, we found it very heavy. Abnormal. On the 17th of January 1915, we could see land ahead of us, but ice gripped our ship. Just days from getting my men and equipment ashore, the ice packed firmly all around Endurance. Our desires were for the south, but we drifted, locked in the ice, west, then north. Signs of distant trouble came nearer and nearer. Great masses of ice heaved up and rolling over one another.
The dogs set up distressed wails of uneasiness and fear.
Emperor penguins walked towards the ship, halted, proceeded to sing what sounded like a dirge.
The sailor element saw in it an omen.
Will none of us get back to our homes again?
The end came Wednesday, 27th of October, 1915. No ship could stand against the terrific pressure of the ice. It was a sickening sensation to feel the decks breaking up, the great beams bending and then snapping with a noise like heavy gunfire. The cabins splintered. I cannot describe the impression of relentless destruction. Ordered all hands onto the ice.
A terrible night. The ship outlined dark against the sky. The noise of the pressure against her like the cries of a living creature.
Morning came in chill and cheerless. Our cinematographer Hurley rigged his kinematograph, getting pictures of Endurance in her death throes. We were 28 men, with 49 dogs. We were 346 miles from the nearest land. I decided to find a solid floe, make a camp on the ice, drift, wait until the summer came so we could put the boats into the water and escape from our icy prison. The task? To reach land. I pray God I can manage to get the whole party to civilization.
We had lost nearly all our equipment, had only the clothing we wore. We were in pack ice, too thick to use our boats, so must stay camped and go where taken by the ice.
The ice had closed about the Endurance, never to open again, except to let her down to the bottom of the sea.
January 1916. Shackleton ordered the dogs to be shot. Dogs were no use to us on the floe.
The worst job I ever had in my life. Many men I would rather shoot than the worst of the dogs.
Drifting past land we could not reach. The ice too broken to march over, yet not open enough to launch our boats. The longing to feel solid earth under our feet filled our hearts.
Oh, how I hate this pack. A list of all on our floe. Expedition leader, Sir Ernest. Second in command, Wild. Four scientists, two surgeons, the two Max, McElroy, and myself, Alexander Macklin. Artist, Marsden. Photographer, Hurley. Crean, in charge of sledging stores. Lease, Royal Marines, in charge of motors and stores. For the ship, the Captain Worsley. First, second, and third officers. Chief engineer, plus second and third engineers. Seven crew, including stowaway Blackborough. And the cook, the carpenter McNeish.
Nothing to do but get into our sleeping bags and smoke away the hunger. What Lloyd George calls a luxury for working men. Long may our tobacco last.
Our chief need, an opening of the ice. Our chief danger, being carried beyond the land. We look forward to at least a temporary ending and breather on land. After that, we have our rescue to think about.
April 9th, 1916. Our floe suddenly split right through the site of my tent. The floe had become our home, and now our home was being shattered. At last, we managed to get freely afloat.
Launch boats!
For dear life, we rowed. We were free. Free! First night, camped on a swaying floe. But the floe cracked in halves. Rest of the dismal dark night shivering. Next night, on an isolated floe. Blizzard raging. Third night, drifting. The boats tethered together. Wet, achingly cold. Fourth night, boats shipping seas which froze. Life well nigh unbearable. Fifth night, hope all but died. Most could row no more. Following night, frantically bailing, we heard the growl of surf on rocks.
The promised land, rugged in the extreme. Great black headlands, gulls screaming about the ledges.
A narrow beach sighted at the foot of the cliffs. Not ideal, but it was land. Another 12 hours at sea would have almost certainly killed half the party.
Decided we must risk it. Shot through on the top of a swell, the first landing made on Elephant Island. Thought the honour should belong to the youngest member, so told Blackborough to jump over. He seemed to be in a state almost of coma. To avoid delay, I helped him a little roughly over the side of the boat. He sat down in the surf and did not move. Had forgotten, both his feet frostbitten badly. April the 15th, 1916. The first land we had been on since December the 5th, 1914.
Several of us dragged Blackborough ashore and left him sitting dazed on the shingle. Helpless men staggered aimlessly, terribly frostbitten and half delirious. Flung themselves down on the beach, trickling pebbles through their hands. Some had lost teeth by some accident. All were white and had heavy rings round their eyes. Shackleton, gaunt and haggard, could scarcely speak above a whisper.
Most people in semi-hysterical condition and hardly knew whether to laugh or cry. Pitched tents on the beach and turned in and slept. Absolute, dead, dreamless sleep.
Delicious to awaken and feel this is real. Solid earth after 170 days on a drifting ice floe. A terrible chapter in our lives ended.
Outlook anything but cheering. Obvious signs that at spring tides our beach would be covered. A move absolutely necessary.
Shackleton ordered me to pick a boat's crew to explore in the hope of finding a safer camping ground. 7 miles west, found a spit of land running out from the cliffs. Some moderately level ground used by penguins as a rookery. A few seals and sea elephants basking. Looked a paradise. Breaking camp, launching the boats, leaving the safety of solid land to face the horrors of another boat journey.
Embarked into a gale. Hour after hour we toiled at the oars. Such a wild and inhospitable coast.
A bad time. At last we saw the beach. Rocks studded the shallow water. But the first boat was ashore, the men jumping out and holding her against the receding wave. We began to get stores and gear out, working like men possessed. I noticed Rickinson turn white and staggered in the surf, his heart unequal to the strain. The spit, just rock and shingle.
In storm and darkness, did not look half so hospitable as when I'd seen it the day before.
About 8 of the party broken down and unable to work. The boss, far more active than any other person in the camp. Just before dark, everything safely ashore, and we were drinking a hot mug of Bovril, heated by the blubber of a young elephant seal.
After all, another stage of the homeward journey accomplished. We could afford to forget for an hour the problems of the future. Life was not so bad.
We lay down, utterly fatigued. Alas, blizzard fury hurled gravel and ice splinters, ripping tents to shreds. Wakened at 4 a.m. by the tide swishing outside, atrociously cold, and not a square inch of shelter. Blizzard continued all day. Pitiless hell.
Tents and gear spoiled before we had a chance to fix things up. Gear blown away and lost.
April 18th, my birthday. Many tough ones in my life. This is the worst ever. Almost whole day spent under flattened tents, in soaking clothing and sleeping bags. Gale continued next day. All hands suffering from exhaustion. Many had saltwater boils. Three confined to their sleeping bags. Blackborough could not stand on his swollen feet, in dreadful pain. Hudson, lame through a blow on the hip. Rickinson, too weak to be of any service. Some of the party had become despondent, in a what's-the-use sort of mood.
Showing signs of demoralization, thinking more of the discomforts of the moment than the good fortune that had brought us to sound ground and comparative safety. Condition of their gear illustrated the proverbial carelessness of the sailor, frozen stiff. The proper thing is to keep articles thawed by placing them inside one's shirt during the night. The owners said they wanted dry clothes and their health would not admit of their doing any work. Only by rather drastic methods were they induced to turn to.
Driven to work, none too gently either.
Those who shirk duty should not be in these parts. These are harsh places. Our refuge was like the scrimped courtyard of a prison, a spit of rock thrust out into the sea, with a sheer ice cliff on the land side and a cluster of huge boulders just off its tip.
A boat journey in search of relief was necessary and must not be delayed. No chance at all of any search being made for us on Elephant Island. I decided to try to go from Elephant Island to South Georgia, where I could count on finding whalers at any of the whaling stations. About 800 miles in the 22-foot boat. A boat party might make the voyage and be back with relief within a month, provided that the sea was clear of ice and the boat survived the great seas. The perils were extreme. Decision made, I walked through the blizzard to examine the James Caird. She seemed to have shrunk.
Started to deck in the Caird.
We had to face the most tempestuous area of water in the world in a small, weather-beaten boat, already strained by the work of the previous months.
April the 23rd, Easter Sunday. Squally and snowy. We have come to conclusion that only shelter available is by burrowing into the end of the adjacent glacier. Commencement on this work today.
We worked like miners at excavating a cave to live in.
Elephant Island, April 23rd, to Frank Wilde. Dear Sir, in the event of my not surviving the boat journey to South Georgia, you will do your best for the rescue of the party, and you are in full command from the time the boat leaves this island, and all hands are under your orders. I have every confidence in you, and always have had. You can convey my love to my people and say, I tried my best. Yours sincerely, E.H. Shackleton.
April 24th, Easter Monday. All called at daybreak. A farewell breakfast, the extra dish being a biscuit and jam, much appreciated. The boat finished. She was launched, very nearly capsized, shooting the carpenter and Vincent into the water.
An anxious moment, as she is our only hope.
About 1 p.m. she set sail. The crew, Sir Ernest, Captain Worsley, Crean, Carpenter McNish, McCarthy, and Vincent.
Shackleton came ashore to say goodbye. His only orders to me, that I should make an attempt to reach Deception Island the following spring in the event of his failure to return.
With 3 squawky cheers from us, they set off. Such a tiny boat soon lost to sight on the great heaving ocean.
Our leader had departed.
Then the questions. Will they make it? If not, how long will we be able to exist?
How to feed ourselves? How to house ourselves?
Seeing some of the party in tears, I immediately set them all to work. My own heart was very full. I heard one of the few pessimists remark, "That's the last of them." Almost knocked him down with a rock.
Work excavating ice shelter. Wretched weather. Everything sodden. With the prospect of coming relief, however, one can endure much. The Caird should make South Georgia in 14 days to rescue this party immediately. How we shall count the days. Next day, heavy fog and sleet. The ice cavern abandoned.
Commenced to build a hut with boats as roof.
Ordered the party to collect flat stones. 2 walls built 4 feet high. The 2 boats turned upside down alongside each other on top of the walls. A sail fastened over them to form a roof. Side walls made from torn tents. protection given by two large rocks to which the boats were lashed.
All done in pouring, soaking rain. Got the place ready for the night. 10 men perched up in the thwarts like roosters, the rest of us on the floor. During the night, a blizzard blew, covering us all with snow, in constant fear the boats would be thrown down on top of us. Then, what a miserable getting up. Foot gear frozen stiff. Men sat and cursed, not loudly, but with an intenseness that showed their hatred of this island on which we had sought shelter. The most unhappy hour of my life. Wild turned us to immediately after breakfast.
Lash up and stow!
We went ahead with finishing our shelter, using bits of blankets, any spare gear.
The floor, shingle, mixed with ice and penguin droppings, the stench of melting guano, appalling.
Only drawback, its smallness. 10 feet by 18 feet.
Awful squalor. The blubber stove smokes abominably. We're living in a chimney. Heart only 4 feet headroom under the thwarts. Impossible to stand up. The upstairs people in the thwarts supporting their bags with pieces of wood, a couple of rudders, a piece of dog tethering line, can just manage to lean on their elbows.
The entire party of 22 sleep in this small space, sardiniously.
For meals, we cluster around our little stove, coughing and sneezing. Conversation chiefly on the progress of the James Caird and estimates made of her daily distance.
Miss Sir E, very much. We pray the Caird may reach South Georgia safely and bring relief without delay. Life here is almost beyond endurance.
In spite of all, jokes as frequent as curses at our conditions. Wild a cheery boss.
Almost every night, disputes.
Pinch 6 inches of my hand.
Move over.
I encroached on Dr. Macklin's allotment. He had a good deal to say on the subject.
McElroy and myself, patients to see daily. Very difficult and trying. Pulled a tooth for Kerr. Not much refinement here. Come outside and open your mouth. May 2nd. At last, we woke to find a gleam of sunshine.
First time since reaching this godforsaken spot. 70 penguins came up. We bagged the whole of them.
1 week's meat. From the highest point of our spit, a view beautiful beyond imagination. Perpendicular peaks, glaciers that hang and cascade to the sea like frozen cataracts, yet unwelcome. The ocean obscured by pack ice, a vast, impenetrable field.
The pack may prevent our relief. May the 3rd. Killed 30 penguins. Our method? Surround a little crowd and hit them across the back of the beak with a heavy club. A penguin can be skinned like pulling off one's vest inside out. Skins are laid out flat and stored for fuel. The last bird for the day, one generally uses the blubbery inside of the skin to wash some of the blood off one's hands and even give one's face a good wipe over using the feather side as a towel. May the 11th. 300 penguins up. Suggestion to round up the penguins dismissed by Wild. I think it absolute folly not to get all we can until we have a supply sufficient to last us. One penguin per day between every 2 men is a total of 1,300 birds for May to the end of August. If we go short, we have only ourselves to blame.
May the 12th. Thick, wet, snowy drizzle. Daily hope of the relief ship. Date of our relief. I say June the 1st. After supper, Hussey played his banjo, brought safely through the boat journey.
Took photo of group. The most motley and unkempt assembly.
Bay full of ice, dashing our foolish hopes of relief.
James, our physicist, is very learned. Reddish-haired with spectacles.
I never think of physics. My last days in Cambridge, I was hailed from a window, asked if I wanted to go to the Antarctic. Of course I said no. Persuaded to give my name to Shackleton. Interview lasted possibly 5 minutes. Shackleton asked if I had good teeth, suffered from varicose veins, and if I could sing. Not Caruso stuff, of course, but I suppose you can shout a bit with the boys.
May the 16th. Snowing, so in bag all day, bored to distraction. Ice filled the bay just when we were expecting relief at any time. 17th. Blizzard again. Indoors again.
Breakfast, penguin steaks and water. Lunch, nut food and milk. Supper, chopped penguin leg and water. McElroy asking round the hut what each man would like for a simple dish.
Apple pudding and cream.
He wants marmalade pudding and Devonshire cream.
Apple dumpling.
For me, many returns of scrambled eggs on buttered toast. And Blackborough, bread and butter.
Baked pork and beets.
May the 18th. Winter is hard upon us. Spit hidden beneath a deep layer of ice. Terrific gusts shake the boat's superstructure. Keep us in a constant state of anxiety. May the 19th. A day I am utterly powerless to describe. The most wondrous colours. The wildest grandeur. Gorgeous sunrise and sunset.
This place can be very nice when it wants, but it generally prefers to act the devil.
Two seals captured this afternoon. Add a fortnight's fuel and food to the larder. Choruses being sung praising Wild.
Oh, Frankie Wild, oh, tra-la-la-la-la. Mr. Frankie Wild, oh, tra-la-la-la-la-la.
My name is Frankie Wild, oh, my hut's on Elephant Isle. The walls without a single brick and the roof without a tile. But nevertheless, you must confess, for many and many a mile, it's the most palatial dwelling place you'll find on Elephant Isle.
A month since the Caird's departure. All sit in the murky atmosphere, talking of things already spoken of 100 times before.
May the 22nd. Dense pack in all directions. There is very little daylight now and so much dark.
Going to bed consists of taking off our boots and getting into our sleeping bags. No change of clothing.
Four of us lie in a row on the ground. Other end, a row of five. Two of them invalids. Intervening space filled with the stove, the cook's bed, the meat and skin boxes, and Lee's in his reindeer bag. All are resigned now and fully anticipate wintering.
Thursday, May the 25th. Celebrated my birthday. Strong wind and snow. Rain of hairs from bags above me. Wet blanket and ice under me. Hairs and grit and meat.
Celebrated with 7 tins of sardines, quarter of a tin each. Lee's presented with half a tin extra as a birthday present, immediately trading it for a biscuit. A sing-song in honour of Lee's birthday. Hurley, a topical song, hit at Lee's. Lee's a song about saving more food if he had it. May the 29th. Lee's and one or two other have been croaking about our lack of food and fuel, and tonight Wild called for silence and slated them badly. He informed us that we had sufficient to carry on till the end of August, but said that soon we must go on one hot meal per day. Also, our meals are being cut down in size, but we are still getting enough.
Running so short of penguin skins for fuel is the result of our not killing penguins, and could have been avoided if my humble advice had been taken. When the pack came in, Wild said, "Well, boys, you will have to possess your soul and patience for another week, for the relief ship can't get through this pack." Wild is a fine fellow to keep one's spirits up. He is as great an optimist as Sir Ernest, but some of his remarks don't bear much analysis.
June the 1st, the day I prophesied for our relief, but no hope.
June the 3rd, Penguin Day. 115 came up and 115 fell victim. Penguin chasing provides much needed exercise. I gut penguins outside and they are skinned in hut. Awful mess in hut, my bag in a pool of blood. No one had seen any penguins on my bag nor knew anything about it. My execrations were directed at the mob in general.
The birds in magnificent condition. Adds 10 days' fuel and food to the store, for which we are extremely thankful. All in great humour this evening. Wild sings a skit on Lee's with great success.
June the 4th. Wild told me that someone thought they heard me eating sugar in my sleeping bag at night. He did not believe it himself, but to avoid such imputations, he would issue the provisions. I've been in charge of provisions so long. It is an unenviable job. Only too glad to hand over everything to Wild.
6th week since departure of the Caird. Open sea. All scour the skyline in expectancy of a mast or plume of smoke.
If the boat party had made South Georgia, relief should have reached us. Afraid the boat party lost. That anxiety to add to our worries.
The subject is practically taboo, and it is quite obvious that no one really dare say what they really do think.
June the 8th. Hurley killed a big bull Weddell seal this morning with tremendously thick blubber.
We'll provide sufficient oil for light, fuel, and meat for the entire party for about a week.
Primus alcohol added to the milk to make a disgusting drink. And some members convivial.
Loosening the tongue of many a backward singer.
My name is Frankie Wild, oh, my horse on elephant tile. The walls without a single brick and the roof without a smile.
June the 12th. Today is the seventh week since the departure of the Caird. Disinclination to perform even the small necessaries of life requiring exertion. Only lie in one's bag and idly ponder. Despicably snowy and wet, misty weather. The shores are still pack-bound.
The sailors are quartered up on the thwarts. They scrambled for those places to secure the driest billets. Drop boots, mitts, apparel onto the ground dwellers. Reindeer hairs rain incessantly. And food fragments. And uneatable pieces of meat, which we term chews, which they are rather inclined to drop surreptitiously in the dark. June 13th. Turn my bag up to find cause of smell. About half a pound of cut meat. Deadly stink. In my sleeping bag, I keep a cigarette tin, in which I put two-thirds of my nut food and divide it into three pieces. Saving from one meal to another is looked on as being rather miserly. We have now provided two petrol cans with the tops cut off, for hygienic purposes at night. One saucepan sacrificed as a commode for our poor invalids.
Thursday the 15th. Poor Blackborough had to have his toes amputated today.
Wild lent a hand. He is a hard case. Did not show any signs of revulsion at the sight.
The temperature of the theatre, our murky interior, being maintained at 79 degrees by ardently stoking with penguin skins. The operating table built from nut food boxes covered with blankets.
Green Street and Hudson stayed in, both semi-invalids. Hudson lay in his bag with his face averted, did not like it. Green Street took a lively interest in the proceedings. We managed to sterilise instruments pretty well, heated up water over the stove using a Primus and a hoosh pod. We had no sterilised overalls to get into, we merely stripped to our vests. McElroy operated, amputating all toes of the left foot. Had only 8 ounces of chloroform. Although the operation lasted 55 minutes, I only used 1 ounce. He took his anaesthetic very well, was not sick afterwards. I had some soap and a towel. McElroy, Wilde and myself had the luxury of a wash, the first for several months. After the job was finished, some hot water left, borrowed 3 lumps of sugar from tomorrow's lunch and made a drink of hot sugar water.
We were ordered outside. Took shelter in one of the caves, pretty wet and damp. Cut each other's hair to pass the time away. Pretty good frights we made of ourselves. Nearly 3 hours before we were able to get back into the hut. Bored, cold and hungry. Practically the whole of the available anaesthetic used up. So if I have to have my leg off, not that there is anything whatever the matter with it, I shall have to have it done without anaesthetic.
Blackborough was soon round from his anaesthetic and asking for that now rare luxury, a cigarette.
I cannot help feeling the fact I have a military rank causes one or two members resentment. I may be rather tactless, even rather snobbish. Yet I often think there is a clique operating against me.
On the whole, we get along well. Lees is always in trouble with somebody, but we have long ago ceased to look upon him seriously. He persists in banging and hitting Blackbrew's bad foot, not out of viciousness, but because he is a man with the gift of nagging and annoying folk.
It is only natural that one should occasionally get a bit fed up with one another, considering our fearful congestion.
Wilde has made an arrangement. Those at our end of the shelter have one blubber lamp, taking it in turns to use at night. Allows more time for writing and a chance to read. We have about 4 volumes of the Encyclopaedia Britannica incomplete. Have made up our minds that now no possibility of relief till August or September. God send the James Caird has got through safely, or it means making an attempt to reach Deception Island. This is a serious thing to undertake, and means a long stay on this small spit. Wilde has found it necessary to stop all bargaining for food.
All exchanges stopped. There is a clique up against me to whom Wilde gives too much heed. I am called a Shylock.
June the 19th. Hear from Dr. McElroy that Blackborough's foot suppurating badly. Hudson, treated for frostbitten hands since our landing, has developed an abscess on the thigh. 8 weeks since departure of the Caird. June the 22nd, midwinter's day. Ice-free ocean. Day of festivities. Toasts. The King.
The King.
The sun's return.
The sun's return.
The boss and crew of the Caird.
The boss and crew of the Caird.
Sweethearts and wives.
And may they never meet!
Evening, a concert of 30 items. Lees, our pessimist, and Green, the cook, the principal victims of our irony. Owing to lack of room, the artists rendered their items from their sleeping bags.
Pipe down.
Slept fairly well, except for the stertorous snoring of Lees, whom I had to pelt with pebbles from the floor. July the 1st. Usual Saturday evening toast in new beverage. Meths, sugar, hot water, pinch of ground ginger. Left one's palate with a flavour of match heads.
July the 2nd. Rain and sleet. Day indoors. Very long and tedious. Too dark to do much reading. Topics of conversation getting rare. Tobacco very scarce. All the sailors now out of it. An effect on tempers getting marked. The inhabitants of upper story grousing.
They sit about moping and cursing. As they are always being told that the ship will be here tomorrow, it is hardly to be wondered at that they have not put any tobacco by.
These sailor men are not capable of looking after themselves and are like children in many respects.
Holness sits up every night gazing intently at Wilde and McElroy in the hope that one of them will give him the unsmokable part of a toilet paper cigarette. Occasionally, they reward his vigil.
July the 3rd. Blizzard bombarding us with ice all day. All confined to our smoky, oily interior. We dare not leave it. 10 weeks since departure of Caird.
Tremendously monotonous and weakening lying in bags so much. Get quite bedridden. Headaches, smoke from stove, injured eyes. Anxiety, re Sir E. We want ideas to suit events and now expect relief about August the 1st.
McElroy asked me to look at Hudson. He seems worse and the swelling on his buttock is larger. My mind is becoming terribly blank. I lie for hours without so much as thinking in a sort of vacuous state. If only the cross-continental journey had been successful. I was to be one of the party. I was keenly looking forward to it. Now I have nothing.
Lees makes a dreadful noise all night.
Waking us all up by the violence of his trumpeting. Wilde's latest invention is a snore stopper. Has made him tie a noose round his arm. When the snores resound, a pull on the rope is supposed to waken the sleeper. Frequently, however, he snores on.
It has been suggested that the noose might be tried around his neck. I'm sure they would exert their full manpower.
Discovered that the floor of the hut is saturated with water. Stinks badly. Dug a hole in the stones and baled the water. Smell frightful, just like a sewer.
Bail out 80 gallons of cesspit odorous liquid. At least comforting to feel, we can become no filthier. Wilde fits a window improvised from a chronometer cover. Its efficacy, questionable. Anyhow, it looks homely. July the 15th. The glacier extremely active. A low cracking followed by the dislodgement of immense fragments. Vast section this afternoon. An enormous wave.
If a single one of the pieces had hit us, we would have been smashed to bits.
We have been discussing the war, a never-ending source of conjecture.
Most, though by no means all, think the war must be over now. I think the contrary. If it is over, it must have ended in a draw, and we could never tolerate that.
Tempers in the forecastle quarter getting short. These men are rather an infliction, though one or two very decent chaps.
Piled close upon one another, such as we are, we have been given to understand that we are all on an equal footing. Of course, the sailors immediately take advantage. July the 17th. Blackborough's poor feet. Nothing is said, but I believe osteomyelitis has set in. Hudson and Blackborough having complained that my feet touch theirs at night. This is quite possible, as I only have 5 foot 6 inches of space. Wilde orders me to reverse my bag. This enables me to dispense with my halter, which has been a damned nuisance.
McElroy opened Hudson's abscess. Successful attempt. Now great relief.
Blizzard raging all day, all in bags, joints aching. Toast the boss and crew of the Caird with gut rot, banjo, and a verse from Hussey's poem, When.
When you see a man standing with trembling knees and tears of sheer joy through his closed eyelids squeeze, when a faint voice gasps out, fill it up again, please. That's Wilde with his first pint of beer.
July 24th, 100th day on island. Beautiful weather. Everyone out, taking advantage.
July the 27th, calm and warm. Slight diversion of cricket. The bat, a small piece of sledge runner. The balls, pebbles.
How's that? Hey!
Sadly out of practice. 9 months since ship's crushing.
July the 28th. Pulled a back molar tooth for Wordy. Interested audience. Pretty embarrassing for poor Wordy.
July the 30th. Cold, gloomy. Today, particularly monotonous. The precipitous cliffs that confine us loom through the mist. Our sole exercise is to promenade up and down the spit, or climb to the lookout and scan the misty skyline for a mast. Weary of estimating the days from the Caird's departure.
This about the 10th month unbathed. An occasional rub with a wet sock on face and feet is all possible.
July the 31st. Wordy and I walk along the shore. I find and kill a big pregnant female seal, cutting open its head with a shovel and removing its brain with my hand. August the 1st. 2 years since Endurance left London. 12 months ago, her first severe nipping from pressure. Crushed 2.5 months later. 6 months of insecurity. Flow drifting slowly north. Our phenomenal escape. Dwelling here, nearly 4 months. Now, more bleak, wintry, inhospitable than ever, we are imprisoned. Sitting like an invalid in one sleeping bag and rereading the same few books.
Drinking out of a common pot with people suffering from dental caries, etc., and lying in close proximity to a man with a large discharging abscess. A horrible existence.
Pretty short of fuel and meat. No one seems to care very much. Indifference very marked lately. Sir Ernest's non-return now openly discussed.
Wilde has recently allowed members to mark and have their own penguin legs. Has led to a great abuse. I do not care for this. It breeds a selfish spirit.
August the 10th. Penguins came ashore. Weather too bad to slay them. We are heartily sick of being compelled to kill every bird. The penguins bring an air of homeliness. They congregate around the hut, paying little heed to us. Limpet collecting at low tide amongst the rock pools.
Several parties obtained about 800 limpets. Strong cliques are now formed. This is bad.
August 13th. Beginning to look anxiously for the ship. This is about the time when it might be expected. No ice, except bergs in sight. We've been eating seaweed, boiled. Tastes peculiar, but anything for a change.
August the 16th. Eagerly on the lookout for the relief ship. Some have quite given up hope and look upon the boat journey to Deception Island as a necessary thing. I hope it will not come to this. But, if so, I aim to be one of the party. This waiting in uncertainty, almost unendurable.
The pack, as dense as we have ever seen it. No water visible. Bleak and depressing. The silence extremely oppressive.
If pack does not go soon, we shall run short of food.
August the 21st. Discussion with Wilde read the dispatch of a party to Deception.
Blackborough's foot still much inflamed. Trip to Deception Island come to be looked on as a probable event. Bay still full of ice.
August the 23rd. Wilde announced meat is getting scarce.
Everyone is concerned, but general bravadoism, loud shouting, etc., to keep up each other's spirits. Meat left is gangrenous and being used recklessly. Three penguin legs each for breakfast.
Anyone thinking three legs extravagant can save one for when we have no food.
August the 26th. After lunch, a wind sprang up and drove the ice out of the bay.
August the 30th. Spent morning digging away snow from around the hut.
Even such light work now fatigues us.
Then to collect limpets. Called in to lunch at 1 o'clock, boiled seal carcass, but just about to be served when Marston burst in asking, hadn't we better send up some smoke signals? Wilde called out to know what was the matter. Marston replied with the magic words, a ship, and she looks as if she is going past.
We realised what had happened and just hurtled out of that hut, pell-mell, with some boots on, some off. We grabbed all kinds of things and waved and lit fires and shouted, and soon had the satisfaction of seeing the ship turn in and lower a boat.
Took my Burberry waistcoat and fastened it to the flag halyards and hoisted it. No one cared about anything but getting off and escaping from this hateful spit. Blackborough was brought out, and I carried him on my shoulders to the rocks where Wilde was signalling for the boat to come in. Saw Sir E and Crean aboard. The boat's crew were foreigners, ship flying the flag of Chile.
Wilde was able to hail and call out, all well.
Hip, hip, hooray!
Wilde shouted for three cheers. Then they cheered.
Sir E, desperately anxious to get us away without a moment's wait, came alongside the Yelcho, as the ship was called, clambered aboard and started off.
Engines at full speed, racing for the open sea and freedom. Good old boss.
I stayed on deck to watch Elephant Island recede in the distance. I could still see my Burberry waistcoat flapping in the breeze on the hillside.
The bliss of feeling the motion of the sea. I lay on the floor wrapped in a blanket thinking how pleasing to be kept awake by the throb of the engines, then lie like smouldering logs on Elephant Isle. So much news. The wonderful adventures of the boss and his companions. They're crossing the blizzard-swept ranges of South Georgia. Three unsuccessful attempts to rescue us.
Always the line of ice blocked the way. I begged the Chilean government for the Yelcho for a last attempt. Started south. The 22 men were just at the end of their resources, with only a precarious foothold between grim ice fields and the treacherous ice-strewn sea. Made arrangements for men and staff to go to England, all hands being keen to take their places in the Empire's fighting forces. We lived long days in the South. The danger of the moment is a thing easy to meet, and the courage of the moment is in every man at some time. But I want to say that we lived through slow, dead days of toil, of struggle, dark striving and anxiety. Days that called not for heroism in the bright light of day, but simply for dogged, persistent endeavor to do what the soul said was right. I've done it. Not a life lost. And we have been through hell.
In Beyond Endurance by Meredith Hooper, Ernest Shackleton was played by Dominic West, Thomas Lees by Jamie Glover, and Alexander Macklin by Mark Edelhunt. Frank Hurley was played by Gabriel Andrews, Frank Wilde by David Hounslow, Reginald James, Neet Mohan, and Harry McNeish by Sam Dale. The banjo was played by Mike King, and the director was Justine Willett.
Why are you here? Is that what you want me to ask? Well?
On an alien world, one man prepares for the mission of his life.
We, the Ecumen of Known Worlds, want an alliance with the nations of Gethin.
Starring Toby Jones.
Why would I embrace dealing with creatures so monstrously different from us? Or are you telling me I have no choice?
My mission is peaceful.
Ursula Le Guin's The Left Hand of Darkness, starting on Sunday the 12th of April at 3 o'clock, and then on the website.
If you'd like to receive our newsletter with full details of the week's radio dramas, Just search for BBC Radio Drama Newsletter.